much about.
Silence, children. Silence. First, an announcement. We have a treat for you guys today.
If you don't mind, I will begin at the beginning.
It's a new day. Let's get going.
1, 2, 3.
Bad boy!
4, 5, 6.
B.I.G.
Flopping wieners, dangle wieners, in my bed. And now.
All right, excellent. The fans are ready. You can feel the anticipation. It's almost showtime.
Our feature presentation.
That's the new national anthem. That's what they're considering.
That's right.
The wiener song.
How did I not know the wiener song?
Oh, you'll learn it.
Okay. Yeah.
It'll be sung in front of every sporting event. You won't be able to avoid it, Lisa.
Excellent.
Morning, everybody. Brand new Kevin and Bean Show. It is Wednesday, the 30th of July.
First of all, beer mug, nice job with the water main break. Well done.
I assume Muggs
was involved, don't you guys?
Yes.
Yeah. Isn't that what you think whenever there's a plane goes down or somebody gets beat up or shot, you always go, "Well, that's Muggs again."
I heard the water main broke, yeah. And I thought, "What was Muggs doing in Westwood?"
Right? Anyway, great program planned for you today. Very excited. Got a story to get us started like we do. I don't remember if we covered this at the time that it originally happened in April of 2013, but there is an update on it. This is the story. Do we ever talk about the naked doggy door girl in Texas?
I don't know.
25-year-old who crawled naked through a doggy door and was found hiding in someone's bathtub. Well, the story happened. It was a big viral sensation at the time, but she has never spoken out about the incident until now. And this week she gave an interview to MTV News. And I thought it was fascinating because so often we see these stories of people who do bizarre things, and we always want there to be, just like our Car Chase channel, always want there to be follow-up.
Follow-up question.
Yeah, somebody – we want something beyond the arrest report. We want somebody to sit down with them a month later and go, take us through that night.
Yes.
Tell us what happened. And that's exactly what MTV News has done. And it's in Weatherford, Texas. Sarah Elizabeth Soto is her name. And I know you're already thinking this question, Kevin, so I'll just tell you. She's attractive enough that you wouldn't mind finding her naked in your bathtub.
All right.
She's 4'11", 110 pounds. So what happened was, according to her, and there are some corroborating details from the police department involved as well, is she was having a bad night. She found out that she was adopted that night. The people she thought were her parents had that talk with her where they explained that they were not her actual mother and father, birth parents, and she wigged out over that news.
Right.
All right. Wow. So she jumps in the car and she just drives to get the hell out. She says, I tried driving, my ass driving west. I got to Weatherford, which is the city in Texas where the incident occurred, and it was late.
Was she already
naked?
I don't think she's naked at this point. Okay. No. I had spun out of control because of an 18-wheeler, and I wind up in a ditch, she says. By the way, the police say there is no evidence of an 18-wheeler spinning out, but they did find her 2012 silver Nissan in a ditch. She said, I started to walk. I managed to make it out of there. I walked down the freeway. Someone pulled over and offered to help me, but they were super scary, so I did not go with them. She's still not naked. Kevin.
Okay.
I made it to the police station at 12:45 or 1 in the morning, and I said, hey, I was in an accident. I explained to the cop where it happened. He arranged to have my car towed. I thought that was going to be the end of it. The cop was going to help me get help. I was going to use the phone to call my mom. His exact words were, that's not my problem. There's a gas station 3 blocks away. The cop did not help me call my mom. He sent me out walking in a little black dress to the gas station. I didn't have any money. I knew nothing would be open. It was past midnight, but I went anyway.
So halfway through, she took the dress off and was
still wearing the dress. You know what? Just to make it easier and save us some time, I'll let you know when the dress comes off.
All right.
Now, she doesn't say whether she went to the gas station and what happened there, but the MTV news said the nearest gas station closes at 5 p.m. and the phone is inside, so it's possible that she could not find a phone to use.
Closes at 5 p.m. Anywhere in the world that happens?
The only time I see that is in super small towns.
Wow.
Super small. So she starts going to through people's backyards and front yards too, and starts knocking on, not naked, Kevin.
Right.
She starts knocking on doors. She claims she knocked on 6 doors and no one answered or was home. Now that seems unlikely to me at 1 o'clock in the morning. Doesn't it to you?
Yeah.
I don't think you can find 6 houses in a row where nobody's home at 1 o'clock in the morning. That just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
I start going into people's backyards. I've never broken into a house before, but I have music in my head. I'm having Led Zeppelin going. I'm in ninja mode. I decide that I'll go into somebody's house, grab a cell phone, call my mom, and leave. I'll meet her at an intersection. I'm going by windows in people's backyard, and I'm nervous. But then I see this doggy door. What went through my mind subconsciously was, get ready, Kevin, if I take my dress off at this doggy door, I can't get blamed for stealing anything, and no one will think I have a weapon if I have nowhere to put it. That's why she took the little black dress off and left it outside the doggy door.
Nope.
That's pretty good thinking.
No, I don't buy that for a second.
She feels like she is going to encounter a homeowner, and the first thing they're going to think is this person is a burglar or this person is dangerous. But if I'm naked, they can't think either of those
things. Plus, if they're a homeowner, they would not be interested in a girl.
The shock factor also, if somebody were to be in there, whether it was a male or female, they would be shocked and say, are you okay? So I take off my dress and panties at the doggy door so they wouldn't shoot me, so they're not scared of me stealing or trying to kill anyone.
Naked.
She is naked.
All
in
right,
this
good.
She also clarifies, I allegedly went through the doggy door, but no, that's not what happened. Everybody is wrong. I put my hands through the doggy door and I reached up and unlocked the door and walked in the normal way. I didn't see a phone, but an alarm went off, and I was like, S. But I was already in the house, so I ran for it. I saw one door. It happened to be the bathroom, so I sat in the bathtub. When the husband opened up the door, he said he thought it was an animal. He kept looking around the house, but he peeped his head in and he saw me. I guess I did have a smile on my face, like they said in the articles. It was one of those faces like, hello,
yeah.
Hoping he'd be like, what the F, and just let me go. But he's like, honey, he says to his wife, there's a girl in the bathroom. And the wife says, call the cops.
How different would that conversation have gone had he not been married? Or had she not been with him?
Right.
Hey, 25-year-old Sarah, what's going on? Everybody on the internet was like, oh, she's the other woman, and the wife found out, and he just made up that it was an intruder. But no, he was an honest man. He wasn't cheating on his wife. He was just making sure there wasn't anything wrong. But the alarm had gone off. He was scoping out the house. He's a good guy.
Naked.
She also says, on YouTube, they said I was sprawled. I was not sprawled. I was not lying down in the bathtub. I was sitting down, holding my knees to cover my boobs so they weren't showing. The police came. They arrested me. They gave me my dress back. Everybody asked if they put me in handcuffs naked. They did,
naked.
But they didn't give me my panties back, and I don't know where they are. She also claims, by the way, and I know we're running out of time here, that she was not drunk or high that night, that this was all rational decisions that she intentionally made, although the police officer says in the report that she did seem to be high. And as an additional note, by the way, she has some notoriety on the internet because she is a rapper who goes by the name Sarah Tokalot.
Oh. Okay.
She admits straight up, I'm a pothead, but I had not smoked anything that night. And I am tired of this life. I want something new. The cop is like, smoke anything tonight? Any bath salts? No, I'm sober. I'm more sober than I've been in a long time, I said. If I was high on pot, I would not gotten into that situation, breaking into people's houses, allegedly through doggy doors. So that is her story, and she is sticking to it. What do we
think? Naked.
What do we think?
I don't buy it.
What part trips you up, Lisa?
If you want to take off the dress, okay. But the panties?
Yeah, no. You can hide contraband
you
in there.
You leave those on. Nobody's going to think you're packing a gun or whatever. You just,
yeah.
I can't imagine a girl that would want to be discovered completely naked.
So you're saying there must have been some drugs involved.
Yes,
otherwise, it wouldn't have ended up that way.
Yes.
You're suggesting she wasn't making the most rational decisions when she climbed through somebody's doggy door.
She wasn't really
to use a
thinking,
phone.
Well, A, B, C, D, E, F, and G. No, I don't think so.
All right.
I buy it. So Lisa calls BS on it.
I buy it. I like it. And I want it to happen. And I want it to happen to me.
I am tweeting out the link to the story if you want to see more, including photos of the young woman involved. But there you go. Naked doggy door girl. We finally have the complete story.
All right. Let's talk about today's Kevin and Bean Show, shall we?
You know what? I'm not here to judge.
I am. The World Poker Tour is coming to town. We have Vince Van Patten and Mike Sexton, who are the announcers for that.
Okay. Why aren't you competing this year, Kevin? Tired of winning? Too much money?
Just too much, yeah. I don't have room for it.
Just becomes a hassle.
No, I haven't had time.
Yeah.
But maybe they'll talk me into it. It's not that hard to talk me into anything, really. So we've got them coming in. We have the director of Sharknado 2, the second one.
Yay!
Anthony Franco. Very excited about that. We have Adam Carolla with This Week in Rage.
Yeah.
We have your tickets for Arcade Fire.
Uh-huh.
Our breakfast with Arcade Fire. Matter of fact, we're going to do that between 6 and 6:30 this morning. So you have a chance for that. Weird collectibles. If you collect bizarre stuff, we're going to want to talk to you in the 7 o'clock hour.
Okay.
And we also have a guy by the name of Malcolm who just got a big record deal from seeing he and his two band members playing music in Times Square. And the weird thing about this story is they're 11.
Oh, my God.
The old one might be 12.
I think one of them may even be 13 by now. They were all born in the 2000s. They've played Coachella. They've opened for Queens of the Stone Age. They've opened for Guns N' Roses. They are the real deal, you guys. And the band's combined age is 38.
And they rock.
They sure do.
This is not like pop-type music. They just get out there and rock.
Yeah, they shred.
So it's awesome. So we'll talk to them as well. We'll take a quick break and come back with the Showbiz B-Deck. Not now. Yep. Well, 6.7 K-Rock is KROQ. You are listening to the Kevin and Bean Show. It is 5:55.
Those days are gone.
Those days are way gone.
Yeah.
What, where Kevin cared?
How dare you?
He would get
a lot
on the microphone before a song ended.
When I started, I would be so scared that I would miss it and not be there. I would turn on the microphone. I would be positioned. I would have my headphones ready, turned up, ready to go.
Yeah.
And it's still like a minute into the song, leaving about another three left. And I would just hold position.
Yeah. We could use a little bit of that now. Just a little bit.
You don't mention, Kevin, you were also sober at those times.
That's
and
true.
Had something in your mind that you were planning on saying. A lot of changes over the years here on the Kevin and Bean Show.
How are you going to do being like that?
Ralph is here, though. Time for the first look at the Showbiz Beat here on a Wednesday morning. What's going on?
Well, it's all going down in Ibiza. Ibiza is where the action is. Partying together.
That's always where the action is.
In the same crowd. Orlando Bloom and Justin Bieber. Till S went south, man. They squared off. What's up, bitch?
Did they fight?
Bieber said, allegedly. Next thing you know, Orlando Bloom throws a punch. By all accounts, Bieber turns and runs out of the restaurant. Runs away. You don't want to get hit by He-Man Orlando Bloom, that's
right,
for sure.
Sure, not terribly threatening.
Chick fight! Chick fight! They were yelling in Ibiza. Yeah, here's the thing. They've got some bad blood together because you may remember, we reported the story back when it happened. The Biebs was at one of those Victoria's Secret fashion show, TV shows, remember? And he was backstage, and there was a rumor at the time that he was had a dalliance with Orlando Bloom's then-wife, Miranda Kerr. And then after the fact, and after Miranda Kerr and Orlando Bloom split up, Orlando Bloom was seen with Selena Gomez out and about in the town.
Wow.
So they do not like each other, according to reports, and it all came to a head in Ibiza. Maybe they were in the foam room or something.
Sure.
And things went down, and by all accounts, witnesses say Bloom did throw a punch. Bieber ran behind a security guard currently at one point, and then hightailed it out of the restaurant.
Look, Bieber's a little bitch. I'm not saying he's not.
Yes,
but it's smart for him to not get involved in a fight at this point with the legal troubles that he's got going on in the world.
Spoken like a true she-man.
I'm just saying somewhere that comes back to get him in trouble with everything that the bad decisions that he's already made.
I'm just saying, when it comes time, Bean, and we throw down, you better not run out of the restaurant.
That's right.
That's all I'm saying.
The rest of us are going to block it.
You better take a stand. Be a man.
I,
Having said all of that,
say something about your character and throw down.
Everybody keeps talking about how there are no viable opponents for Ronda Rousey. I say Rousey Bieber is the fight I want.
Well, she would demolish him.
I know, that would be awesome.
Right?
She would armbar his whole body and just break him right in half.
She would body bar him.
Yeah.
But how much fun would that be for us to watch?
That would
be like
awesome.
Like a dog with a rag doll.
But that's still not a good opponent for Ronda Rousey.
It'd be fun for us, though.
No, it's not good for her. Don't get us wrong. It's for our entertainment.
But a fifth grader with a wiffle bat could take down Bieber. That's not a good fight. I don't want to watch
let's
that.
Let's do that, then.
Fifth grader with a wiffle bat.
Yeah, let's do that.
Well, we're talking about the Biebs. Another list of what celebrities make, just in case you're in the middle of breakfast or something and you want to get a stomach ache. Here's what some celebrities make. Let's start with the Bieber, since we were talking about him. What do you guess he pulls in a year? Per year. Per 1 year.
Per
12
year.
12 months. Over the course of 12 months. Over the course of 52 weeks. What do you think his income is?
$25 million.
That's an excellent, excellent, horrible, horrible guess.
Is it horrible high or low?
Horrible low.
Oh, my God.
Horrible low.
$25 million is a lot.
Not in Bieber's world.
Lisa?
It's like $70 million.
You kids are cute.
Bean?
Oh, my God. My guess would have been closer to Kevin's than anything. How much money are we talking about here?
What if I told you $200 million?
No, I would say it's a misprint. Or read it again, your eyesight is failing.
What? On what?
Yeah, what's he doing?
Concert. What is he selling?
Endorsements?
This list from Star Magazine. They have a list of these five celebrities. You give an idea of the range in what people are making a year. $13 million a year for Rihanna.
Okay.
The article here says $200 million a year for Bieber.
What?
Angelina Jolie, $33 million.
Worth it.
Jennifer Lawrence, $26
million. Worth it.
And Jessica Simpson.
Oh, perfume,
right? Clothing line. We
clothing line. About. Now, this is not probably what she takes home, obviously, but this is what she has earned through her clothing line, her perfume line, whatever she has going.
If you can get those to go,
Weight Watchers,
you are set for life.
What her business is worth, combined with all her other assets, close to $1
billion.
Oh,
no.
No.
Oh, my God.
What?
Isn't she the chicken wings come from fish or whatever that was she did?
That's what she is. Actually, I believe it was
whatever.
It was tuna comes from chicken of the sea, I believe.
That's it.
That's what it was.
Not that much difference. Chicken wings come from fish.
But kale is a fish, though, right?
That's our own Jessica Simpson.
You said $1 billion.
Net worth, yeah.
With a B. Right.
So that's enough to put you off your oatmeal.
Wow.
Money can't buy happiness.
That's
it
true.
Is happiness.
That's true. Today's celebrity birthdays. Boy, big list. I'm just going to burn through them. Find your own ages, because we're just going to start naming names. Actress Joey King. Oh, she's adorable. She's a little 15-year-old girl from Fargo and Wish I Was Here.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Wrong
easy,
bell.
Easy there.
I was thinking of Jamie King, the model, I think. I'm sorry about that.
I understand. Yvonne Strahovski.
There you go.
Jamie Presley. Hilary Swank. Christine Taylor. Tom Green. Director Christopher Nolan. Actor Simon Baker. Terry Crews. Vivica A. Fox. Lisa Kudrow, Lawrence Fishburne, Jean Reno, and Arnold Schwarzenegger all celebrate.
Wow, it's too much.
Big day. Star-studded. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
One of the biggest bands in the world is going to be right here at K-Rock Friday morning with us. It's Kevin and Bean's Breakfast with Arcade Fire. We would like you to be there in person. Plus, we want you to go see him at the Forum this weekend, too. We got contestants on the line at 1-800-520-1067. Arcade Fire, as you know, Kevin, is from Montreal, Canada.
Correct.
There are lots of famous people from Canada. Maybe you don't realize that. You don't think they contribute anything. They've contributed lots of stars, and that's why we're going to ask you to name that Canadian.
Can you name that Canadian celebrity? Get it right, you'll see Arcade Fire. You see, the band is from Canada. It's time to name that Canadian celebrity. What's that on the book?
The next Weird Al right there.
I think so. Well done, DJ Omar Khan. All right, so I'll ask the question. All you have to do is come up with the name of the Canadian celebrity. If you're right, you go into the drawing. Someone wins tickets to Breakfast with Arcade Fire. Who's our first contestant?
Let's go to Montclair and say good morning to Chad. Hi there.
Good morning, guys. Good morning, Lisa May.
Good morning.
Hi, Chad. Listen up. Born in London, Ontario, this movie-making heartthrob is known for movies like The Notebook and Drive. He started his career as a cast member on the Mickey Mouse Club and probably took the virginity of both Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera. Name that Canadian.
Justin Timberlake.
No, I'm sorry. Close, though. That's his good friend Ryan Gosling is who we were looking for. He's the actor from The Notebook. All right, thanks for calling. Who's next?
Next is Tress from Santa Clarita. Hi, Tress.
Hello.
Hello, Tress. And we move on to our next contestant.
Okay.
That contestant was not very good. this is Tess on this line?
Hello?
What the hell's going on?
So wait, Hi. That DJ was not very good. It seems like someone was on the wrong line, I guess. All right, is it Tess or is it Tress?
It's Tress.
Okay.
And that's a real name?
Yes.
And that's what you go by? That's what people call you?
Yep, it's on my birth certificate.
Tress.
Okay. All right, I think it's on you then. Here's your question. Listen up, name that Canadian. Born in Burnaby, British Columbia, this suit and tie-wearing singer is called this generation's Frank Sinatra. He's had 4 number one albums in a row here in the U.S. and has dated lots of famous actresses, including the beautiful Emily Blunt. Here's an audio clue for you.
And I promise you, kid, that I get so much more than I get. I just haven't met you yet.
Name that Canadian.
I don't know.
Michael Bublé is who we were looking for time.
Oh, my God.
Sorry. Call us
right? How do you guys feel Breakfast with Arcade Fire ticket well. Qualification is going?
Very well so far. Let's try Lewis in Monrovia. Hi.
Hello. How's it going?
Good.
Poorly.
Well, I mean, the game's going poorly, if that's what you're asking.
All right, Lewis, another Canadian for you to name. Born in Brampton, Ontario, this star of films like Juno, Scott Pilgrim, and Superbad is 26 years old but still looks 15. He might actually always look 15. Name that Canadian.
Oh, I don't know.
Come on!
What?
Weird Al?
Yeah, Weird Al. Oh, no.
Guys, is it me or is Michael Cera a reasonable celebrity to ask our audience?
But it's not a name that immediately comes to my mind.
Michael Cera, he's the Arrested Development guy.
Right. I could picture him, but I couldn't think of his name.
No, I don't think you should take it personally, B.
All right. When are we going to sudden death? We're not there yet, I don't think. Let's try a couple more.
Okay. Let's try a couple more. Luis or Louie in Linwood. Hi.
What's up?
How have you been doing on hold listening to the your fellow contestants?
I've been listening, but... Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't seem good. Canadians are sus.
I guess so.
Canadians are sus.
All right. Born in Kapusaking, Ontario, this multiple Academy Award-winning actor and screenwriter brought us Avatar, Titanic, and this movie that Kevin asked a penetrating question about. Listen up.
Are you the guy that directed The Abyss?
Yes.
That's pretty interesting.
Name that Canadian.
Kobe Bryant. I have no idea.
Yes, Kobe Bryant. How did he know?
James Cameron, one of the most famous filmmakers in the world today, ladies and gentlemen. All right, we got to be at sudden death now,
yep,
right?
Yeah. Sudden death. Next person.
This is unbelievable.
I misspoke. I said next person that gets one right. I mean the first person
that gets one right.
Let's go to Danny and Downey.
All right. Hey, good morning. Good morning, Lisa May.
Sudden death. You get it right, you win.
All right, Daddy, listen up. Name that Canadian. Born in Edmonton, Alberta, this actor does it all. He was a spaceship captain on TV's Firefly. He's also a mystery novelist on TV's Castle, and he's the voice of Sergeant Buck in Halo. Plus, the ladies think he's dreamy. Name that Canadian.
Oh, man, why can't I get the game? Come on,
huh? Because you got another really easy one, that's why. Lisa, you know that one?
Yes.
Nathan Fillion.
Yes.
Right.
Okay, thanks.
That one I got.
All right. Let's go to...
No one comes to Breakfast with Arcade Fire, by the way. No one.
Let's go to Raul in Glendale.
You can't make that.
Hey, guys. Good morning.
Bean's getting upset.
You can't make that rule, Bean.
Raul, listen. We've gone through 6 other phone calls, and our success rate is not 100%.
I got this.
All right.
Okay. Born in London, Ontario, this singer is famous for never wearing a shirt, egging his neighbor's house, and spitting on his fans. He also has 53 million people following on Twitter. Who is he?
The Bieber.
Yeah!
Nicely done.
You win it all, my friend. Breakfast with Arcade Fire in the Red Bull Soundspace Friday morning. Plus, we want you to go see them as our guest at the Forum either Friday or Saturday night. Thanks so much for playing. Name that Canadian.
What's that on the boot, eh?
The band is called Unlocking the Truth. We're going to talk to their 13-year-old lead singer and guitarist, Malcolm, coming up in about 20 minutes or so right here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Also, we'll talk World Series of Poker. Actually, it's the World Poker Tour that we're talking about today. Adam Carolla and the director of Sharknado 2. It's all coming up on K-Rock.
First, let's talk about Donald Sterling. Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that happened.
Your mic wasn't on, was it?
It was not. At least you know I'm not picking on any of you when I don't turn on your mics. Because I don't turn on my own.
Let's talk about Donald Sterling, shall we?
I was watching, I believe, the Galaxy were destroying the Sounders Monday night. Is that what I was watching, Bean?
Yeah. And 3-0. That happened.
Across the bottom of the screen, I saw Donald Sterling has been defeated in court. He no longer has a claim to the team. His wife / ex-wife, whoever she is, Shelley, can sell the team to Steve Ballmer, and it should go through mid-August, which is literally a couple of weeks from now.
That's awesome.
That's right.
Very exciting.
And this is great news because it was going to get ugly if he was still in control of the team, if that sale was stopped somehow. A lot of the players and coaches were talking about walking off and not even showing up for work at the beginning of the season. So bad news for Clippers fans. So we wanted to find out, Donald Sterling, a very sound defeat. What's he going to do now? We asked Dave if we could line him up because, well, you remember that he's all, before we go to Donald on the phone, he's also a little bit crazy and senile, too.
Yeah, I have a clip.
I don't understand why in the world I said any of those stupid, uneducated remarks.
Right.
And that is part of what sunk him in court.
I don't know if I say this. He acts so holy. I mean, he made love to every girl in every city in America, and he had AIDS. And when he had those AIDS, because he has money, he's able to treat himself. But Magic Johnson is irrelevant in this thing. And I respect him, and I admire everything that he does.
All right.
Well, what has he done? Can you tell me?
kind of contradicts himself all over the place.
Yeah, the judge said that Shelley's testimony was far and away more credible than Donald. Donald's answers were often evasive and in one instant were inconsistent with his previous testimony. So that's why it's kind of no surprise he didn't really represent himself well. But Mr. Sterling is back on the phone on the Kevin and Bean Show. Hi, Donald. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Kevin and Bean. How are you?
We're good.
Well, we're happy with the news, I'm sorry to say. We're happy the way the judge ruled against you.
Well, I'm not happy about it.
Right. But you had to see it coming. I mean, the entire NBA wants you out.
Well, this thing is not over.
Yeah, I think it is over.
It actually is over.
No, it's not, because we're going to appeal this.
Right, but the judge said that Shelley can go ahead and sell the team whether there's any pending legal action from you or not. It is a settled matter.
Well, that's fine, but when I appeal it and it gets overturned, then that sale won't be valid. I'm going to be the owner of the Clippers.
You lost, and you're suing for $1 billion in damages from the NBA, none of which you're going to get.
I'm going to get all of the money.
What?
And I'm going to get the Clippers back, and I'm going to be the owner of the Clippers.
Okay, none of that's going to happen, and you're not even allowed in an NBA game.
I am allowed in an NBA game.
You're not. The NBA said you're barred.
And in fact, I will probably be playing in the NBA next year.
You're a little older and very much fatter.
I still can play in the light.
You can play.
You
can't.
And that's all
you can't.
That matters. I can slam a jammer.
Nope.
With the best. I will posterize you.
You are. You need to just go away. You just need to lay down like an old man and take a nap.
No, that's not going to happen because I am going to sue the NBA,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to sue my wife,
right?
Who is a lovely girl.
Right.
She's a wonderful, wonderful woman with a lot of love in her heart.
Right.
But she's an evil whore.
It's weird because those two statements, they sort of contradict each other.
Yes, they do.
Are you making fun of me at my list now?
She said that I was mentally incompetent.
Right.
You sound a little mentally incompetent, if we can be completely honest, sir.
Just because I did one radio interview and I couldn't turn my own microphone on.
No, that was...
I don't think that is a sign of mental incompetence.
That was me.
No, that was actually Kevin. That was Kevin
and
who did that.
Listen, the NBA...
Yes.
They sleep with every woman in every city.
No.
What?
Okay, you don't want to go back down that path.
The NBA. Everywhere
they go. He was talking specifically about Magic Johnson and that.
Oh, was he?
Yes.
I am he, first of all.
That's a good point.
And second of all...
Kevin, are you having trouble keeping this bit straight?
You need to lie down.
I need to lie next to you wherever you're lying down.
I think maybe...
All right, listen, I am going to own the Clippers.
I think you will.
I know that much.
You know, we're the only radio station in Southern California, maybe even in the country, that's given away this new K-Rock Summer sticker. That's right? Exclusive to us.
We're the only station giving away the K-Rock sticker?
Yeah.
That's,
I'm just saying.
Crazy. How did we get that exclusive deal?
I don't know. I think they must have signed it up a long time ago before everybody realized how desirable they were. You can pick one up at all Southern California Hot Topic locations and enter to win a 2014 Dodge Challenger, a trip to see the Black Keys anywhere in North America, plus a $500 Hot Topic gift card. And don't forget the Mugs himself is going to be handing out additional K-Rock prizes at the Hot Topic in Downey at the Stonewind Center today starting at 1. Ralph is here now. Time for the Showbiz Beat on a Wednesday. What's going on?
Well, it's on.
What's on?
Biebs and Legolas. The Battle of the Century.
Biebs and Legolas?
Legolas.
Legolas.
That was the character Orlando Bloom played in the Eye of Agamotto movie. You know, the Lord of the Rings.
If you're going to consider who's fighting, and you look at Orlando Bloom, you go pretty much the other guy. Unless it's Biebs.
Yeah, this is the perfect square off. I think they're in the same weight class and the same level of toughness and everything. They were at a party at a club in Ibiza, and they were seated next to each other, which was a bad idea because both of them have a history with the other person's woman. Orlando had been seen hanging out with Bieber's on and off again girlfriend Selena Gomez after his breakup of his marriage, and back in 2012 at the Victoria's Secret Fashion Show in New York City, Bieber was seen backstage with Orlando Bloom's then-wife, Miranda Kerr, and rumor had it that they got very close. So there was a bad blood between these two. So they're at tables, and Bieber apparently walks by Orlando Bloom's table and puts out his hand to shake Orlando Bloom's hand. He refused to shake it. And then, according to witnesses, Bieber said something to the effect of, "She was good."
He needed to be wrecked. Right that second, somebody should have punched him in the face.
That's when Bloom tried to punch Bieber in the face.
Good.
They were separated by their entourages. And reportedly, Bieber ran behind his security staff and then ran out of the party. Ran out of the building. Ran like a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
Then, just to show what a good guy he is, Bieber then Instagrammed a picture of Miranda Kerr in a bikini.
Wow.
He always takes the high road, doesn't
he? Mythic proportions. So we'll keep you posted whether there's going to be a rematch or not, but we're hoping.
That's crazy.
That is the weakest feud ever.
Really is.
Everybody in the world is at some point going to want to punch him in the face.
Give these two a couple pistols and let them settle it at dawn. The way they did in the good old days. Paramount Pictures is under fire after releasing a poster of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Poster for the movie shows the four turtles leaping off the top of a tall office building that seems to be exploding at the top as they jump down out of the flaming floors of the building down to the street below. Now, none of this would have mattered all that much to anyone if the official release date for the film wasn't September 11th.
Oh, wow.
Who would have? I mean, if you were doing it, would you have thought that? Maybe?
I think I would have if I'd been in America, but this was in Australia where September 11th doesn't mean anything to them.
Right. But however,
where's the outrage there?
Paramount Pictures is still, to the best of my knowledge, an American company, And right. I believe it does have some Americans working for them in some capacity, in some office.
It's something somebody might have caught.
Somebody should have caught along the way.
Somebody should have looked at those two images, September 11th in big bold letters, and the building exploding and people jumping out of the building.
Do you think it was the beer mug of their office?
The beer mug of Paramount.
Hey,
yes, absolutely.
Hey, guys, I was just thinking, shut up.
They'd probably call him Cabernet Glass or something, a little more high-end there at Paramount. Probably Merlot Snifter or something, but I'm just saying. There is a beer mug someplace over there at Paramount.
Look, I think it's something they missed, Ralph. I agree with you, but I don't think it's anything that anybody did intentionally.
Well, of course not.
I think it was just an oversight.
It was just stupidity.
So you can't get that mad at it.
Watch me. I can get that mad
That's
at
true.
It.
That's true. That just happened.
And this is bad casting. Bean's not going to think so because he's going to go, oh, she's so good. She's so good. But, you know Allison Williams from Girls?
Yes.
Yes. She's hilarious on that show.
She has been tapped by NBC to play Peter Pan in their upcoming musical production, Peter Pan Live, with Christopher Walken as Captain Hook.
Now, I don't want to disappoint you. I'm a fan of hers. I like her very much on Girls. That doesn't strike me as particularly great casting.
She seems
too big to play Peter Pan.
She is much too big to play Peter Pan. She's much too womanly to play Peter
Pan.
Peter Pan is supposed to be a little boy who never grows up. And it is famously played by a woman, a slight, slender, boyish woman, so that you can get away with that because it's hard to find a kid who can actually have the chops to pull off that role.
Right.
So they originally on Broadway, is played, for example, by an actress named Mary Martin, who was a very small, slender woman who was able to pull it off. And Kathy Rigby did for many years. She was a gymnast who also had a very boyish sort of youthful figure. And Allison Williams strikes me as none of the above.
Right. She's got boobs and everything.
Yeah, everything. So she is their choice, and I think.
I say there's the role for Beaver.
Ah, oh, that's who they wanted initially.
Perfect, right?
Yeah. The little boy who would never grow up. But it's going to be Allison Williams.
All right. Well, she can sing. We do know that.
That's the thing.
She's a very good singer.
Yeah, so maybe that's why they tapped her. But
like to tap her. Wow.
I knew there was going to be something creepy in there somewhere. I kept waiting for it. I don't know if I gave him enough room.
Creepy alert, creepy alert, creepy alert, creepy alert.
Lena Dunham also apparently is going to be in the production. She will play Captain Hook's ship.
Is that right?
Yeah. So looking forward to that. This sounds like an odd idea for a TV series, but I'm willing to give it a shot. Office Space star Ron Livingston has just been cast in a new AMC comedy pilot called We Hate Paul Revere, about two brothers living in colonial Boston who hate Paul Revere, their neighbor, local silversmith and patriot Paul Revere.
Okay.
You can't say it's not original. Nothing else. And more TV news. Our good friend Jim Gaffigan, his sitcom has been picked up by TV Land.
That guy's funny to me.
He is very funny, and I look forward to seeing what he comes up with. It'll be in a semi-autobiographical comedy about Jim, pretty much playing a version of himself, a happily married guy with five kids living in New York. So we'll wait and see what that has to offer. And TV Land now has the room for that new sitcom because Kirstie Alley Show Kirstie has been canceled after
season.
That was a show.
Huh.
Co-starred her old Cheers co-star Rhea Perlman and Seinfeld star Michael Richards were also in that show. I don't know how that whole thing happened under my radar, but I was not aware of any of that. But it is no longer with us. Let's take a look at today's celebrity birthdays. Actress Joey King from Fargo and Wish I Was Here, 15 years old today. Yvonne Strahovski turned 32. Jamie Presley's 37. Hilary Swank is 40 years old today. Christine Taylor turns 43. Actor Tom Green, also 43. Christopher Nolan, the director of the Batman trilogy, is 44. Simon Baker, the Mentalist, he's 45. Terry Crews is 46. Vivica A. Fox turns 50 today. Lisa Kudrow is 50. Lawrence Fishburne is 53. Actor Jean Reno is 66. And our former governor, Arnold Schwarzenegger, celebrates his 67th. Birthday today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
More tickets for our breakfast with Arcade Fire. You can win this hour on the Kevin Bean Show. That includes tickets to go see them at the Forum this weekend. It's going to be the Red Bull Sound Space Friday morning. I think, what do we say, Kevin? 8 o'clock, I think?
People I believe
can
so,
listen,
yeah.
Listen to that. Watch that. 8 o'clock Friday morning. So I'm watching my beloved Seattle Mariners the other night, and they introduce a new player up for his first MLB game. His name is Chris Taylor. Got a hit, by the way. Very excited for him. And I was looking over his bio, and I see that he was born in the 90s. And I thought, That's still weird to see professional baseball players who were born in the 90s to me.
Right.
Then I see this story of a band, a very popular band out of the New York area called Unlocking the Truth, who just signed a big multi-million dollar deal with Sony Music. All of these guys were born in the 2000s.
Oh, my God.
They were all born in the last decade.
At the oldest, 14?
Yes, they are 13, 13, and 12, and they didn't get signed. They're no novelty act. They didn't get signed because of their age. They got signed because they rock. Listen to a little bit of Unlocking the Truth.
That's pretty awesome.
That young man shredding on the guitar there is named Malcolm Brickhouse. He also sings with the band. And from Unlocking the Truth, we welcome Malcolm to the Kevin and Bean Show. Hello, sir. How are you?
I'm good. And you?
We are good.
Congratulations on Unlocking the Truth. The most shocking thing for me, Malcolm, is to read how long you guys have been together. When did you start?
Well, me and the drummer Jared, we started when we were about 7 years old. I met Jared at a birthday party, and he was like 4, and he started coming over to my house, and he asked if we want to start a band, and I just said yes. So.
And how old were you when you started playing guitar?
7.
7 years old. Huh. Are you one of those kids who just took to it naturally and it was easy to you, or is what I'm hearing today the result of thousands and thousands and thousands of hours of practice?
Well, at first I had a few lessons, like only for like a year or so.
Right.
And then I was learning by myself for the rest of the year. So.
Gotcha. And what attracted you to playing metal music? A lot of kids your age would have, you know, been into dance music, EDM, or maybe pop. Why metal?
Because when me and Jared were younger, we used to watch wrestling, and the opening music for the wrestlers was metal. And then we also used to watch Japanese animated music videos, and had a lot of metal on it. Since we heard it a lot, I guess you liked it more than what we heard on the radio.
Have you had people try and talk you out of that and into any other type of music? The metal scene isn't happening anymore. You need to do this or do that.
Say it again.
That type of music isn't really making it huge right now, So maybe you should focus on something else.
No, I think people that, when people found out that I like metal, I think, like, my family, while they supported me, like, my friends in school, they didn't understand it because they all listened to hip-hop and stuff like that.
Right.
Sure. And Unlocking the Truth, do you remember what your first appearance was, or the first time you played in front of people other than your family and friends?
Me and Jared and our old singer, when our band used to be called Tears of Blood, our first show was at the Apollo Theater at Amateur Night.
At the Apollo.
Wow. And how did they respond? I mean, that's one of the most famous music venues in the world, but they almost always feature soul music. How did they respond to what you guys were putting down?
It was really nice because, like, when we first performed for the first time, we won, and, like, the crowd was so excited. Like, it was a really nice time. I was nervous at first. Then when I got on stage, all the fears went away. And
that's amazing.
We won the first time, but lost the second time. And we still wanted to, like, keep going with the band. So we asked my parents what should we do next. And they thought performing in Times Square would be the best idea. And that's what we did.
Let me ask you about your parents, because it does seem like every single band story includes the band dropping out of A, high school, or B, college to take after music, and the parents going, oh, no, no, please don't do that. You haven't even you're barely at high school age yet.
Yeah, we're not going to be dropping out anytime soon. We're not going to drop out. We're going to look into homeschooling and stuff like that.
So, yeah. The Times Square video went viral for you guys. That's how we found out about you, and that's how a lot of people do. Is that also what got you onto stages like the Coachella and Warped Tour?
It's probably that video. Someone posted it online. It wasn't like my dad usually posts most of the videos, But some stranger, I guess this wasn't Times Square, recorded us, put it online, and somehow it just went viral. I'm not sure how.
Yeah, well, because people love to watch you guys play. How did you end up opening for Guns N' Roses, and did you get a chance to spend any time with them, Malcolm?
Well, we have the same booking agent as Guns N' Roses, the agency group, and they found out that Guns N' Roses needed an opening act, and they called us. So that's how we got the gig, and I met Slash and the guitarist Bumblefoot and the drummer, and that's really it. Guns N' Roses is not what people think of him. He's a very nice person, and everybody in the band is really nice that we met, so.
Axel's definitely old enough to be your grandfather, though, right?
Yes.
So, Malcolm, we heard a couple of weeks ago that you signed a contract with Sony Music, and you have a ton of stuff that you guys have already written. How many songs do you have?
Well, we have a lot of songs, like 30 songs, but you've only recorded one for the album so far.
Only one, all right.
And you're working on that now? You're going to make a full-length album, or what do you think?
Yes, we're going to make a full-length.
Dude, that's don't good. Have your whole life. You got to get this music cranking out. Let's go. Step it up, man.
I know you're a huge fan of Metallica, and this is the voice of our friend Malcolm Brickhouse on the phone. We're talking about his band, Unlocking the Truth. Have you had a chance to talk to or meet any members of Metallica yet, Malcolm?
No, but very soon we'll be performing at Heavy Montreal, and they invited us to watch their performance at the side of the stage, and it was really nice to meet them.
That's fantastic.
It must just be blowing your mind to be opening for huge bands and being asked by, you know, Metallica to stand on the side of the stage. What's going on in your head? You're just going, is this actually happening?
I guess so, because, like, when we were younger, I didn't think, like, me and Jared were seven, I didn't think, like, all this would be happening so fast. I thought, like, this happened when we were adults, and it just... unbelievable how fast everything is happening. So.
A 13-year-old just said when we were younger. That just happened.
Well, you guys deserve all your success. You're very, very talented, and we're big fans of your band. We can't wait to see what happens next. Do you have any message for other kids who might be listening, and you know, other 9, 10, 11, 12 years old who would like to be in music? Anything you can share with them that you've learned, Malcolm?
Yeah, always, like, do what you want to do. Don't listen to anybody. What anybody else says, and just, like, be yourself.
Malcolm and the band, Unlocking the Truth, will be playing in town, by the way. You can see them at the Troubadour this Friday.
Wow.
At the Troubadour this Friday. If you want to buy tickets, you can get them at ticketfly.com.
Not this Friday.
Yeah, the tickets go on sale, I think, this Friday, Kevin. The show is Saturday, September the 13th.
That's what I meant to say. Yes.
Unlocking the Truth is going to be in town. Saturday, September the 13th at 7. Tickets go on sale this Friday at 1 o'clock. Go to ticketfly.com. It's an all-ages show. Tickets are just $15. This sounds like it'd be a tremendous amount of fun, especially for kids to go see Unlocking the Truth at the Troop. Malcolm, I'm so glad we got a chance to talk to you. I'm sure this won't be the last time. Thank you for the time.
All right. Bye.
Bye now.
Irene Perez from Los Angeles just won this hour's tickets for Kevin Bean's Breakfast with Arcade Fire Friday morning in the Red Bull Sound Space at K-Rock. And she'll go see him at the Forum this weekend as well. Your chance to win coming up next hour along with Adam Carolla here on K-Rock.
All right, let's talk about people who collect things, because I'm not one of them.
Nor am I.
Seems like there are a lot of people out there who really have these huge, complete collections of stuff, whatever they're into. For example, Ralph Garman, Batman, the 66 Batman TV show. He's got a full room of stuff.
Yeah, he's got thousands of items.
I'm pretty sure Adam West is in there as well, and he just slides a plate of food underneath the door every day.
I told Ralph that while Mr. West is alive, he's got to get him to consent to being stuffed in, you know, when he finally dies, so that could be the ultimate piece of the puzzle.
Oh, no, that's an easy conversation to have.
I already lined it up with Weird Al. Weird Al's going to be stuffed and living on my couch when he dies.
Right.
It said it can be done.
Sure.
I'm not a collector at all, by the way, and I know you're not either. How about you, Muggs? Do you collect anything?
Dodger bobbleheads.
Oh, see, now that's a popular collectible. A lot of people do that.
I have some collectible items, but I'm not a completist. I don't need all of whatever. Mm-hmm. I have a replica Stanley Cup. I have a couple of hockey sticks that are signed. I have a couple of basketballs that are signed by Kobe and the Lakers.
Right.
And that's about it. And then I'm out.
But there's nothing in you that goes, hey, I have this Kobe basketball. Now I've got to get a fill-in-the-blank, the next player basketball. Then I got to go get the other one. And you don't need 1,000 of them. Kobe, you're just happy with a few.
Kobe won't allow any other basketballs on my shelf. That's just kind of the way he is.
Well, the reason this topic came up and the reason we thought it might be fun to talk to you, the Kevin and Bean Lister, about your collection is Ralph did a story yesterday about Jason Sudeikis. Now, he's getting ready to marry Olivia Wilde, which is such a good deal.
Yeah.
And they did an interview, or she did an interview recently with O Magazine in their apartment. And the person who was doing the interview noticed that there were 200 pairs of Air Jordans in the apartment. And that's apparently Jason Sudeikis' thing. That's what he does, is he goes out and collects Air Jordans.
Not just tennis shoes, not just basketball shoes, but Air Jordans.
Right. And there's a huge number of sneaker collectors. That's one of the most popular collectibles in the world. I don't get that. I don't get why you go out and pay $200, $300, $400, $500, sometimes a lot more than that for some of these hard-to-get, out-of-print shoes. I don't get why you want to own those and put them on a shelf, but lots of people do it. And there are lots of people who have thousands of sneakers, too.
Yeah.
He's only got 200, but he just collects Air Jordans.
200 pair of Air Jordans, though, takes up a lot of room.
It does.
It's an entire wall. An extraordinarily colorful wall in our apartment, she says. Guests come over and they expect me to have all the shoes, but it's actually Jason Sudeikis. She, by the way, collects miniature items. She likes anything that's tiny. Tiny furniture, tiny cameras, tiny trees. She says, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids is my favorite movie. It's everything I could dream of in a film.
I like somebody that collects tiny stuff because it's out of the way.
But that's also, when you think about how many tiny things are made for,
yeah,
like train, you know, toy train sets and things like that, I mean, that's a collection that could get out of control too. That could be thousands and thousands and thousands of items. Well, I don't know what we're going to find from the Kevin and Bean listeners, but every once in a while we'll talk about what you collect, and we get some interesting calls at 1-800-520-1067. Let's do one real quick before the break. Let's get our man Aaron on. He's calling from Eagle Rock, and I think he's exactly the person we're looking for.
Hi, Aaron.
Hey, guys. Hey, Lisa May.
Hi.
What kind of collection do you have?
I collect Pez dispensers.
Pez dispensers.
Oh, my God.
Now, before you tell us – yeah, go ahead.
Any certain type?
No, I mean, I have a bunch of them. I collected them mainly when I was a kid. I kind of fell off recently, but I just bought two recently that are Dodger-themed. So I think I'm getting back on the train.
What is it about Pez dispensers that you like?
I have no idea. I just loved them ever since I was born.
They have candy in them? That's it?
Yeah. I'm not a big candy person. I just love the Pez dispenser.
That's weird then. Look, I like little toys where their head comes off at the neck. That's what I like.
How many Pez dispensers do you have, Aaron?
I got about 400.
Wow.
What do you think it's worth?
I really don't know. I could probably, maybe about $500-$600.
Would you ever sell it?
I would consider it if my wife made me, but she hasn't really seen it.
You have a wife? That's awesome.
Lots of people who collect things have wives, Kevin. Come on.
I'm just saying, they're the lucky ones.
All right, Aaron, thanks so much for listening. Thanks for the call. 1-800-520-1067. 400 Pez dispensers. That's quite a collection, right? Although I bet there are people out there who have 2,000.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's one of those things that there's so many of.
The more obscure, the better, by the way. The weirder, stranger, smallest stuff maybe people don't think about. I mean, I think a lot of people say Matchbox and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Right. Baseball cards.
Yeah, something like that. But the weirder, the better. 1-800-520-1067.
Vince Van Patten and Mike Sexton, commentators for the World Poker Tour, join us in about 20 minutes or so right here on the Kevin and Bean Show. Oh, Kevin, we got to get a game going in here, right?
Yeah.
Clean those guys out.
They both play.
Adam Carolla next hour as well, the director of Sharknado in the 9 o'clock hour. Right now we're talking about your collections. Canon Costa Mesa writes in, I have a Scooby-Doo collection of over 300 different items. No duplicates. Angel writes in, and I think you'll get behind this one, Kevin. She collects band guitar picks. She says she has approximately 90 of them, everyone from Hilary Duff to System of a Down, all caught at shows when she worked at the Honda Center, formerly the Arrowhead Pond.
I am down with that, but I think I draw the line right above the Hillary Duff guitar.
But I think if you try to collect it, you know, if you're at a bunch of shows, and at least that's something that she was kind of there. I mean, it's like collecting, it's like saving ticket stubs from concerts
you
go to.
Yeah, I hear you. A lot of people do
that.
In
a way, it's memories, yeah.
I do.
All right, so we're taking your calls at 1-800-520-1067 about your unusual collections. Let's go to Jim. He's in Corona. He's on line four. We got the conversation started by talking about Jason Sudeikis and his 200 Air Jordans. Jim, what are you collecting?
I have a collection of toothpicks.
Toothpicks?
Toothpicks.
Just toothpicks from different places, or how do you...
Now, I have 200,000 toothpicks on my wall in my home theater room. We used to own a pizza store, and we ordered pizza boxes, and they shipped us a case of toothpicks.
Right.
And we didn't know what to do with them.
Well, that's not a collection as much as it is just a mistake.
Well, absolutely a mistake. We took them home and we glued them to the wall of our home theater, and we now have the largest personal collection of toothpicks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as soon as somebody lights a cigarette, that whole place is going up.
Well, yeah, you know, the funny thing is when we have parties, they start disappearing off the walls, and you see people walking around with toothpicks in their mouth.
Sure. Now, so you don't continue to add to the collection. It's just that one case showed up and you saved them.
Yeah, absolutely. But okay. We glued every one of them to the wall.
Not a collection. Thank you for the call, sir. Appreciate that. Let's go to, we got some really good ones here. Let's go to Steve. He's on line seven. He's in Claremont. Another one, Kevin, that I think you would 100% get behind if you had the room in your house.
Steve, hi.
Hi.
What do you collect?
I collect the arcade games from the 80s.
Oh, I would like that, yeah. Like, which ones do you have?
Like Pac-Man, Donkey Kong, Asteroids, Dragon Lair.
Now, you're not talking about little computer versions of the games. You're talking about the actual full-size arcade games?
These are the full-size arcade
games. How do you have the room for that? How many of them do you have?
I have 100.
Where do you put them?
Well, I got some in my garage, about 25, 26, and then the rest are kind of in storage. And I just kind of rotate them out from my storage to my garage.
Don't make me come over there and kick your ass at Galaga.
That is an amazing collection.
Oh, I know.
What do you think it's worth?
I'm sorry?
What do you think it's worth, 100 classic arcade games?
As a whole, all together, I couldn't tell you how much. I mean, I've been collecting since the 90s. Late 90s.
All right, let me put it another way. Which game did you pay the most for?
I paid $4,500.
Wow.
A game called Major Havoc.
That is a serious collection, my friend.
Yeah, it's an Atari vector game from 1980.
How about now? But you leave Frogger out, right? Because that's nonsense.
Frogger's a cool game. I have that one, too.
Okay. All right, one last question. I'm so happy you called. What's the game that you most want to add to the collection but you haven't been able to find yet?
There's a very obscure Laserdisc game that's kind of like Dragon's Lair. It's called Freedom Fighter.
Okay.
Heard of it. It's like kind of a holy grail of the collectors.
Good luck with that.
Thank you.
That's fantastic. Thank you for the call. That's an awesome collection, by the way.
Yeah, if you had room for that, that'd be cool.
If you like playing those games, that's amazing. All right, let's go to Iman. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. He's on line five in Fullerton. Iman, welcome to the Kevin Devine Show. We're talking about strange collections. Now, I understand this one isn't yours, but one you have personal knowledge of.
Hey, guys. It's actually Iman.
Iman.
Love your show,
Iman,
by the way.
I apologize. Thank you.
Yeah, so back in my college days, I was working for a mover company, OC American Movers, and they sent me to this lady's house in Irvine. And, well, while we knocked and knocked and she wouldn't open the door, finally we got in, and I had no idea. I thought we were just moving like a regular apartment. But it turned out this lady had a collection of hats. Now, I'm not talking about baseball caps
hats.
Or anything.
You're talking about fancy hats.
Yeah, like female fancy hats from the 60s, the ones that like you see in a black and white movie.
Right, right. Uh-huh.
Each one of them was like had its own special made boxes. So she had two full rooms stacked all the way to the door.
How many hats do you think?
About 55,000 hats.
Nope.
No
55,000.
8 hours to move all these hats.
But even if you stacked them up floor to ceiling in two rooms, that couldn't be more than a few hundred hats.
And two-car garage all the way stacked to the bottom of it.
What? Well, yeah. I still doubt your estimate in the tens of thousands, but it sounds like a lot of hats.
Eight, No, I counted.
He
like
counted.
Roughly around 55,000, because, I mean, two full master rooms sizes.
Wow.
It could, like, all those stacked to the top of their...
That's crazy.
It's a lot of hats as well. It took me about
I think my conclusion
hours.
Is the same as yours. It's a lot of hats.
Yeah, it's a lot of hats.
A bunch of, like, 24-footer trucks. And I looked at it, I was surprised.
Did you fight the instinct? You had the instinct, I'm sure. Did you fight the instinct to change the hats in the boxes?
I wanted to really bad, but this confuser. Lady was, like, hawking us down with her eyes, like, really overprotective of her hats.
Yeah, all right. They were like her children. All right. Thank you, Iman.
Exactly.
All right.
Maher writes in, he collects hot sauce. He has over 500 different bottles of hot sauce. I don't know how you get started down that path. All right. Let's go to Carolyn Bell. She has a bizarre collection that sounds like a one-of-a-kind to me. It might be a good one to go out on.
All right. Carol, hi.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Good.
I actually do collect eggs. Actually, I have like five friends text me to call. I have a Vivian Alexander purse that's about $4,000. I collect anything that looks like an egg. I have necklaces, ornaments, name it, I probably have it.
Wait, you collect anything that's shaped like an egg?
Anything that's shaped like an egg.
How many things are made that are shaped like eggs?
There's a lot of people out there that collect them. I'm not the only one. It's just anything that I see eggs, I have mineral eggs. So let's say I go to the museum, they'll have mineral-shaped things like eggs. I go crazy around Easter time.
Sure.
I have my ornaments, Christmas ornaments. I have Easter ornaments. I have, I think I have about five purses, but the most expensive was about $4,000.
Do you know why you're interested in things that are shaped like eggs?
Honestly, I study when I was young. I just never knew I had a problem.
Oh, you have a problem.
Do you have any of those super valuable Fabergé eggs? Some of those can be worth tens of thousands of dollars.
I have one that's $4,000.
Wow.
It's just in my room, and my son thought it was a football, so he threw it and he cracked it, and I was very hurt.
Yeah.
But it's still sitting there. It's just something that I just see very valuable. I have no idea why, but it's. I have about 700. I actually just bought 10 of them. So I have about 7-10 items.
And this is instead of having a fulfilling relationship with a man? Or a woman?
In addition to. It's crazy. I understand that, and people look at me a little odd, but if you name it, I probably have it. I have, like, spoons. I have anything that you cook with. I have backpacks. I have...
Shouldn't you have a real football since it's shaped like an egg? And that way your son can play with it?
I do. I'm actually a big Charger fan, but that's besides the point.
All right.
I actually have a Charger egg.
Huh. Hey, Carol, last question. Do you eat eggs, or does that feel wrong to you?
I do eat eggs. But, you know, I have actually a collection just hanging. It's just amazing to me. I go crazy around Easter time. It's
yeah.
One of those
You
problems.
Have gone crazy. I'm sorry. It's no longer going. You've gone crazy.
You're certifiable, right?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you for the call.
Dear Bean, why is Lisa Kudrow not bellworthy? I saw her having lunch recently at Jerry's Deli across from Cedars-Sinai, and she's still looking good. What do you think, guys?
Lisa Kudrow.
Lisa Kudrow.
Look, here's the thing about the bell. If you don't get a bell, it doesn't mean you're not attractive. That's not exactly.
Isn't that exactly what it means?
No, not really.
No.
It's kind of more.
The bell is a level of attractiveness that is above and beyond.
Correct. So you can still be pretty,
sure,
good looking,
cute, funny, likable, personable, lovable.
But I think you need that little extra something.
There's a little hotness factor that earns you the bell.
Yeah.
Every woman's goal should be to get a bell on the Kevin and Bean Show, right?
No, of course not.
It's really irrelevant. Not much of a
today's a tough
at
day because I find Hilary Swank very attractive.
Oh,
and Dave's,
too skinny.
But that's just Dave's not down the on case. Me for that.
No, she's just too skinny.
Dave, meanwhile, couldn't be more wrong, man, by not believing Vivica A. Fox deserves a bell because she's absolutely hot.
And he's an idiot for that.
Okay,
well,
see, it's tough to make everybody happy.
You and Dave aren't idiots. That's not what we're saying.
As a matter of fact, I think we are saying that. We're
so
saying. That you
the
guys
ruling
are
on Phoebe, though, is no, right? That's what you guys are saying?
I think you're right, Bean. I think she's attractive, and we
but
like
not a,
her.
Not a bell.
And no bell.
Okay. All right, now I know. Ralph is here, time for the Showbiz Beat on a Wednesday. Then we're going to talk poker coming up right after the top of the hour.
Now that we've worked all that out, it is time for the birthdays. Now we have time for a couple Showbiz stories. This is just more proof positive that Matt Damon is just the guy. He's just the man. Arby Barroso is the name of Matt's ex-wife.
Okay.
She tells Star Magazine that she's constantly getting offered money for some dirt on Matt, especially Matt and his new wife, Luciana. But Arby says there's no story. Matt is a fantastic stepfather, and Luciana is a terrific mom.
Good for her.
It's nice.
How great is that?
Yeah, that's great.
I'm sorry. This is Matt's wife's ex-husband.
Oh, okay.
I got it backwards. This is Luciana's first husband.
Right.
And he says he's constantly being hit up for stories, and he loves them both, and he says they're great parents to his kids, and he couldn't be happier.
Very refreshing.
Can I name drop just for a second with him?
With Matt?
Yeah,
sure.
Jimmy Kimmel's wedding.
Mm-hmm.
Saw him there, wanted to say hi. Love him. Love most of the stuff that he's been in. You know how you feel like when you approach a celebrity, you're sort of wasting their time, so you want to get to it?
Yes.
Because there are a lot of other people.
Matt Damon, I love you! Did you just
right.
say that?
So I just walked up and I said, you know, congratulations. We like the whole Bourne series and everything. It's great to see us, blah, blah, blah. And then I figured he would walk away. And he just stood there. And he's like, he said, we're moving to town. You got any advice? And he just had a normal conversation with me like.
Like you were worthy of talking to him?
Yeah.
Which you weren't.
I wasn't.
Yeah.
But to him.
See, that's how good he is.
He is. He's just. He would have gone on forever if somebody didn't pull him away.
He took pity on you and said, I'm going to make this person feel worthy.
I started sweating, going, I don't know. I don't have anything else to say.
Don't ask me for advice.
Literally just one of the most awesome down to earth people I've ever met.
That's awesome.
Back to you.
Well, we know he doesn't listen to our show.
That's correct.
Because had he would have known that.
He would have run.
You probably didn't have anything else to say.
That's correct, yeah.
He would have said, Masala's a toss-up. And he would have said, I don't understand what that means. Justin Bieber got into it with Orlando Bloom.
Stop saying got into it. Because
they threw down,
man. He never gets into anything.
They threw down. Yeah, it was on.
He threatened.
It was for real. I'm going to F you up. No, you're not. stop it. Ow. They were at a party at Ibiza last night, and they have some bad blood between them because both of them have sort of been with the other guy's girl. Bieber, reportedly, something happened between him and Orlando Bloom's then-wife, Miranda Kerr, backstage at one of those Victoria's Secret fashion shows in 2012. And Orlando Bloom, after he split up with his wife, was seen out in the town with Selena Gomez, Justin Bieber's on-again, off-again girlfriend. So they're at the same club at the same time, and their tables are near each other. And according to eyewitness accounts, Bieber went by and tried to shake Orlando Bloom's hand, which is just a dick move, by the way. If you know there's something going on between you, just keep your distance.
Steer clear.
Have your party over here. Just go about your business. But no, he had to go over and like want to shake his hand. Orlando Bloom didn't want to shake his hand. So as Bieber's walking away, according again to witnesses, he said something like, she was good. Meaning, of course, his ex-wife, Miranda Kerr.
Right.
At that point, Orlando Bloom got up and threw a punch at Justin Bieber.
Love it.
To onlookers.
Did he knock him out?
Did he knock him down?
Oh,
he missed.
Orlando. Come on. That was for all of us. The punch was for all of us.
Bieber was asking for it, though, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's taunting Orlando Bloom.
That is an S thing to say. And so Orlando threw a punch. He did not Lando the punch. And then they went at it, and Bieber reportedly ran out of the restaurant to the wild applause of the crowd, by the way, once Bieber left.
Because he was leaving?
Yeah, they applauded as he was leaving.
Sweet.
But being the classy guy that Bieber is, as always, immediately after leaving the restaurant, he Instagrammed on his account a photo of Miranda Kerr in a bikini.
Which you're not allowed to do, by the way, if you run out of there to avoid a fight. You're not allowed to then be, hey, I'm so macho and I win and I'm better than you and look at me.
You can't crow about it.
You can't do all of that.
No, you cannot.
Did you hear what Bieber said to the paparazzi about how much he wanted to win that fight?
No, though? I did not hear anything about what he said. Do you have any audio of that?
I want to win. I want to win this one. I want to win. I want to win so bad.
Right.
It's like I go to sleep at night thinking how much I want to win
right.
in this matter.
Right.
Like, I want victory. I want it, like...
You should have fought.
I want, like, oxygen. I want victory on this. I want to win.
Right. You should have stayed and fought.
I want to win.
Then he left. He didn't try to win it all.
Yep. Yep, that's on. Working. Today's celebrity birthdays. There's a lot of people. I'm just going to burn through them. Bell or no Bell, here we go. Joey King, little girl from Fargo. Terrific on that show. 15 years old today. Yvonne Strahovski. Jamie Presley. Hilary Swank. Christine Taylor. Tom Green. Director Christopher Nolan. Simon Baker. Terry Crews. Vivica A. Fox. Lisa Kudrow. Lawrence Fishburne. Jean Reno. And our own governor at one time, Arnold Schwarzenegger. I wonder how Arnold celebrates a birthday. I think he has a big protein cake with cigars on top or something instead of candles. I can't imagine what the day is like for him.
Meets the new maid.
I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
I suspect, Kevin, that if you could be a professional poker player for a living, you would, right?
Correct.
It's just one of those things. One of those dreams that you go, wow, that's the life, right? Just playing cards and getting paid.
I'm good enough to just get just right on the bubble and then not quite make it in everything.
The World Poker Tour, Legends of Poker Tour, is in Southern California at the Bicycle Casino in Bell Gardens the week of August the 23rd. We could not be more excited to talk some poker with a couple of guys who know all about it. Vince Van Patten and Mike Sexton are commentators for the World Poker Tour, and they join us in studio here on KROQ. Hi, guys. Welcome.
Wow. Hello. Great to be here.
Yeah. It's a pleasure to have you. I mean, it's no secret now. I mean, 10 years ago, if we were having this conversation, I might be surprised how popular poker is, but it has become just a sensation on and off the TV in recent years, hasn't it? It's just getting bigger all the time.
Well, it really is. We're doing fantastic going into our 13th season on the World Poker Tour now. And the Bicycle Casino, where the Legends of Poker is being held, was a charter member of the World Poker Tour. So I've been with us since season one, so it's an exciting event, and we're happy about it.
Tell us about your season. How does it work? Because it's very different than the WSOP.
Yeah, well, we do about we start up the season at the bike, and we travel the world to the biggest tournaments in the world. People put up their own money. We have all the superstar players that play. And you watch them win or lose millions of dollars out there. It's very exciting.
Why do so few superstars win?
Oh, that's a great question. I think in the early days when we were doing it in 2003 and 2004, the big names would monopolize. And they became the big names because in the first two seasons, you know, they won the big events.
Right.
And for a couple years after they survived, no one was that good. It used to be a game that was, you know, they had the secrets and you couldn't break in.
And they were dumb enough to write books.
Yeah, right. And now everyone
giving out the secrets.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. So a couple guys that have won the Legends of Poker event. Doyle Brunson, the legendary guy, wrote the famous what we call the Bible of Poker. Dan Harrington has won that event as well. And WPT Player of the Year, Andy Frankenberger, won it. Will the Thrill Fowler. So some big names have won this tournament for sure. And it's just a $3,700 buy-in. Last year's winner was Jordan Christos, and he took home like $620,000 for his effort. So for that small a buy-in, big prize money.
But here's the crazy thing. The unknowns have caught up. They understand the game.
I was going to say the final tables most of the time include two or three unknowns.
Exactly. Most of the time, exactly. They've caught up, and that's the great thing about it. Anyone has a chance to win big bucks and get on TV and look great.
Well, let me ask you a follow-up to that statement, Vince, and that's when these unknowns are just having a hell of a tournament and they find themselves at the final table, whether they win or not, a lot of those guys then go, hey, I've got what it takes, and then they decide to try to go pro, or are they smart enough to realize, hey, I just got lucky this week?
Well, I think that, you know, it's weird because it's a streaky game, and you see them, and they're doing really well, and they get excited, and then 3 or 4 years later, they disappear.
Oh, really?
You just can't afford it, and all of a sudden they run bad, and then they're gone for a while.
Yeah, it's one of those games. I do like poker because you have a lot of control over it, and it's me against you. I'm sort of pitted against your mind and what you think I have, what I think you have. But you could make the right play all day long and get destroyed. It's not one of those things where if you make the right play, you will win.
For sure.
Right. Right. Now, both of you guys have had a great deal of success playing cards, but do either of you play professionally for money now, or are you just on this side of the TV now?
Well, you know, I've been playing for years and years. I enjoy it. I like cash games especially, but I'm sitting here with Mike Sexton is a Hall of Fame player, great player. Mike, tell him a little bit about some of your results. He's amazing.
Well, I've had my share of success in tournament poker, like many guys have been around as long as I have, I suppose. But it's still fun for me to play. The first seven seasons on the World Poker Tour, Vince and I weren't allowed to play in the events. And now because we go from day one till the end of the tournament, they allow us to play at WPT events now. So the last few years, I probably played five or six events a year on the World Poker Tour. And it's really fun to get in there and play once in a while. Mix it up with these young superstars and see how you can handle yourself against them, because these young guys are bright, they're good, they're fast, they're quick-witted, and they're much highly educated than the old-school poker
right.
players.
Do they give you a hard time because you're the announcer, you've been there, you've won? I mean, do they kind of shoot for you?
Well, not really. I mean, I'm sure that they're just happy to knock us old geese out, just you know, get them closer to the money. But they respect Vince and I at the table, certainly, and they have a lot of fun with us like we do them.
The week of August 23rd at the Bicycle Casino in Bell Gardens is where the WPT is going to be. People listening right now can buy in, can sign up, can play shoulder-to-shoulder with the pros, right?
No question about it. The buy-in is $3,700 for this event. They have $400 satellites going on all the time right now for this tournament.
Explain what a satellite is for people who don't know.
Okay, a satellite is essentially a one little table tournament that you can buy in for $400 to, where if you had 10 players at the table, for example, one player would now win this one table tournament and get an entry into the main event at the Legends of Poker
for
$3,700.
So you don't have to play the $3,700. You can just spend
$400. Correct. You can sort of parlay your way up, is what we call a satellite.
And what's the grand prize, Mike, for the ultimate winner?
Well, they're hoping the grand prize this year will be over $700,000. Last year it was $623,000 or something like that to the winner. So certainly for that amount of buy-in, it's pretty big money, and but it's just not the winner that wins. You know, you pay out.
Sure, sure.
Like 70 players will make money in this tournament. So,
right.
You know, you don't have to win to make money. And, you know, tournament poker is exciting. You know, you have a fixed amount. You know what it's going to cost you to enter. And obviously everyone wants the fame and the fortune that go with the title.
You can go to WPT.com for more details. More with our guests, Vince Van Patten and Mike Sexton, when we return right after this on the Kevin and Bean Show on K-Rock. Adam Carolla in minutes and the director of Sharknado 2 in the 9 o'clock hour. Right now we're talking to a couple of legends of poker. That is also the name of the WPT tour that is coming to Bell Gardens at the Bicycle Casino the week of August the 23rd. Vince Van Patten and Mike Sexton in studio with us. It's so funny, Mike, when I look away from you and hear your voice, I feel like I'm watching TV. You have such a recognizable voice. It's crazy to see you here at our studio, but thanks to both of you guys for coming in. What's the most unlikely card scenario you've ever seen play out in front of your eyes that was just the luckiest break that a player has ever gotten in a tournament you've been covering?
Well, probably the luckiest in the history of the tour. We were at the Bay 101 Casino one year, and a guy had to hit specifically a 7 on the turn and a 7 on the river to win the pot.
And he got both.
He was up against three kings. He had a pair of sevens.
Wow.
And it had to come 7-7, and it did. And that was probably the wildest bad beat of all time in the tour.
Speaking of bad beats, how do guys handle bad beats? I imagine a lot of times they storm out because it really does rip your heart out.
Yeah, it's a bad walk when you lose on a bad beat.
But then you all, you
steaming.
Guys, and then you guys try to do an interview.
Yeah,
pretty quickly after.
They can boil a pot of coffee on their head, but they have to walk away with dignity. It is very tough, right, Mike?
Well, it really is, but it's part of the game. If you play poker, let's face it, you know, you're going to take your share of bad beats along the way, and if it drives you crazy or you can't take it, poker's probably not the game for you, honestly, because it's going to happen. You have to deal with it. It's how you deal with it that separates you from the rest of the players, honestly. And I believe the guys that can take the bad beats the best, stay calm, cool, and collected, will do far better in the long run than guys that really go on tilt after they take a bad beat, as we say.
This will tell you what kind of a poker player I am. I was in Vegas in a tournament, and I stormed out, and I was really, really angry. And I got about 100 feet away, and they started calling my name. And I was like, who the F is calling my name? And they said, sir, you won that hand.
Oh, come on.
I didn't know, like, it was a straight or something that
beautiful.
I didn't see.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't beautiful, because then I come back to the table. Now I'm just throwing a big temper tantrum. And they're right? all looking at me like I'm a jackass, which I was. Now I got to sit back down and play.
Well,
so that hurt.
We saw Phil Hellmuth a few years ago have a bad beat up at Bay 101, and he got so upset. You know, he's the poker brat.
Yeah, people that don't know Phil Hellmuth, he does throw a tantrum from time to time.
Yeah, and he actually, he went to the, he got up, and then he fell to the ground and went into a fetal position. He didn't get up for about 3 minutes. It's true, right, Mike?
Oh, my God.
Pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Was he being a showman?
Yeah, a little bit, but actually that's kind of him. He's the real thing. He is the John McEnroe of poker, and McEnroe couldn't control himself either.
Well, guys like him,
that's
though,
what
like,
makes him fun to watch.
Yes, absolutely.
He's one of those guys that's written books that tells people how to play poker and stuff like that. So if a guy is playing really poor poker and beats him because he got lucky, it drives him out of his mind.
Yeah,
I love it. I root for it every time just to see his reaction.
Yeah, he's great.
In reality, when you take bad beats, it means that you've gotten your money in with the best hand, which is all you can do in poker. You can't control the luck factor. So the truth of the matter is you shouldn't feel bad that you took a bad beat because you got your money in the way you were supposed to.
But if
try to convince that to players.
But if it's still Hellmuth, you know what, though? A lot of times the right move, if Phil Hellmuth goes all in, the right move for me as a novice is to fold, and he's counting on that. So if I don't and I make the wrong move and then I get lucky and beat him, that's wonderful.
Yeah, but guys are playing
just terrible
today. They're not making many bad moves out there. There's a lot of people. Everyone can play. They play well. So that's not happening too often. Anyone.
What's the biggest mistake that amateurs make when they play poker that reduces their chances of being successful at the game?
Well, for the most part, they probably play too many hands, honestly. And they don't get away from a hand, as we say. In other words, when somebody has bet, they don't recognize their beat, or they're going to try to make that gut shot straight draw, and they continue to put money in to draw at a hand where they're an underdog. That's probably the biggest.
They're throwing bad money after good, right? Basically.
Correct.
And sometimes not betting the right amount, not pushing a player out when they're on a draw. So you have to know the right amount to bet at all times.
At the level of players that you guys see, people are pretty able to contain their tells, right? Nobody's given anything away in those games, right?
Correct. For the most part, professional players, they talk about tells and all this and that, but most tells come from amateur players, honestly.
Right.
Like, we see that when somebody is drawn to a flush.
Adam Carolla in minutes and the director of Sharknado 2 in the 9 o'clock hour. Right now we're talking to a couple of legends of poker. That is also the name of the WPT Tour that is coming to Bell Gardens at the Bicycle Casino the week of August the 23rd. Vince Van Patten and Mike Sexton in studio with us. It's so funny, Mike, when I look away from you and hear your voice, I feel like I'm watching TV. You have such a recognizable voice. It's crazy to see you here at our studio. But thanks to both of you guys for coming in. What's the most unlikely card scenario you've ever seen play out in front of your eyes that was just the luckiest break that a player has ever gotten in a tournament you've been covering?
Well, probably the luckiest in the history of the tour. We were at the Bay 101 Casino one year, and a guy had to hit specifically a 7 on the turn and a 7 on the river to win the pot.
And he got both.
He was up against 3 kings. He had a pair of 7s.
Wow.
And it had to come 7-7, and it did. And that was probably the wildest bad beat of all time in the tour.
Speaking of bad beats, how do guys handle bad beats? I imagine a lot of times they storm out because it really does rip your heart out.
Yeah, it's a bad walk when you lose on a bad beat.
But then you all, you
steaming.
Guys, and then you guys try to do an interview.
Yeah.
Pretty quickly after,
they can boil a pot of coffee on their head, but they have to walk away with dignity. It is very tough, right, Mike?
Well, it really is, but it's part of the game. If you play poker, let's face it, you know you're going to take your share of bad beats along the way, and if it drives you crazy or you can't take it, poker's probably not the game for you, honestly, because it's going to happen. You have to deal with it. It's how you deal with it that separates you from the rest of the players, honestly, and I believe the guys that can take the bad beats the best, stay calm, cool, and collected, will do far better in the long run than guys that really go on tilt after they take a bad beat, as we say.
This will tell you what kind of poker player I am. I was in Vegas in a tournament, and I stormed out, and I was really, really angry. And I got about 100 feet away, and they started calling my name. And I was like, who the F is calling my name? And they said, sir, you won that hand.
Oh, come on.
I didn't know, like, it was a straight or something that
beautiful.
I didn't see.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't beautiful, because then I come back to the table. Now I'm just throwing a big temper tantrum. And they're all looking at me like I'm a jackass, which I was. Now I got to sit back down and play. Wow. So that hurt.
We saw Phil Hellmuth a few years ago have a bad beat up at Bay 101, and he got so upset. You know, he's the poker brat.
Yeah, people that don't know Phil Hellmuth, he does throw a tantrum from time to time.
And he actually – he went to the – he got up, and then he fell to the ground and went into a fetal position. He didn't get up for about 3 minutes. It's true, right, Mike?
Oh, my God.
Pretty incredible.
Was he being a showman?
Yeah, a little bit, but actually that's kind of him. He's the real thing. He is the John McEnroe of poker, and McEnroe couldn't control himself either.
Well, guys like him,
that's
though,
what
like,
makes him fun to watch.
Yes, absolutely.
He's one of those guys that's written books that tells people how to play poker and stuff like that. So if a guy is playing really poor poker and beats him, because he got lucky, it drives him out of his mind.
Yeah,
I love it. I root for it every time just to see his reaction.
Yeah, he's great.
In reality, when you take bad beats, it means that you've gotten your money in with the best hand, which is all you can do in poker. You can't control the luck factor. So the truth of the matter is, you shouldn't feel bad that you took a bad beat because you got your money in the way you were supposed to.
But if
try to convince that to players.
But if it still helps you. You know what, though? A lot of times the right move, if Phil Hellmuth goes all in, the right move for me as a novice is to fold, and he's counting on that. So if I don't and I make the wrong move and then I get lucky and beat him, that's wonderful.
Yeah, but guys are playing
just
so well today. They're not making many bad moves out there.
There's a lot of people.
Everyone can play. They play well, so. That's not happening too often.
What's the biggest mistake that amateurs make when they play poker that reduces their chances of being successful at the game?
Well, for the most part, they probably play too many hands, honestly. And they don't get away from a hand, as we say. In other words, when somebody is bet, they don't recognize their beat, or they're going to try to make that gut shot straight draw, and they continue to put money in to draw at a hand where they're an underdog. That's probably the biggest
mistake. They're throwing bad money after good, right, basically.
Correct.
And sometimes not betting the right amount, not pushing a player out when they're on a draw. So you have to know the right amount to bet at all times.
At the level of players that you guys see, people are pretty able to contain their tells, right? Nobody's given anything away in those games, right?
Correct. For the most part, professional players, they talk about tells and all this and that, but most tells come from amateur players, honestly.
Right.
Like, we see that when somebody is drawn to a flush and the flush comes on the river and they jump out of their seat a little bit, you know they made the flush and they're excited. Right.
Maybe he got what he wanted.
But we do see some reverse tells, guys, acting extra cool or extra excited when a card hits. We still see that.
But you're trying to give off a tell that's not real?
Exactly.
Oh, right. So there is a mental game, right, that you're playing with the other people at the table.
Completely, yeah.
How many great women players do you see in recent years?
Well, certainly the number's increasing all the time.
And a lot of them.
One woman player, Vanessa Selps, who's just been more remarkable than any man, in fact, probably the last couple of years on tours. Absolutely world-class. Many would consider her almost maybe the number one player in the world, not the number one woman, but she plays that well. But a number of women playing Bell. Probably the problem with women is they're probably only from 5 to 10% of the entries in the field of our events for the buy-in size, and not that many of them can afford the buy-ins. But for the number of women that do enter, their performance is well.
That's interesting. Every once in a while, we'll see a poker story that'll make the mainstream news, like the Ben Affleck story recently about being asked to leave a casino in Las Vegas because they didn't like something he was doing. What was that? Do you know?
Well, that was blackjack. It wasn't poker.
Oh, it was blackjack. Okay. Because when you're playing poker in a Las Vegas casino, for instance, you're not allowed to count cards?
No, when you play poker,
if you're losing, it's okay.
Yeah.
You know? It just happens when you, which is so ironic. But they're stopping that. But
But when you're playing poker in Vegas, you can't see anyone else's cards either, so you can't really count.
You can only see what's been shown. I guess.
If you're not doing anything misconduct wise, they're never going to ask you to leave a poker table because the truth is the house doesn't care what bodies are in the seat; they just want bodies. They take a rake. That's how they make their money. So you don't play against the house when you play poker in a casino setting, whereas you would play against the house if you were playing blackjack or some other casino.
When was the last time you saw someone kicked out?
Kicked out of a game?
That's where they literally came and said, you have to leave.
I don't think it happens very often. In some home games.
Oh, home games all the time.
They throw pizza boxes across the table and things like that. So. But the tournaments.
Believe me, if you'd have been around Vegas poker games years and years ago, the abuse the dealers had to take and all was just pathetic, but that has gotten so much better nowadays, and they don't tolerate it much nowadays. And on our events, honestly, behavior is pretty high because if you do get out of line a little bit, they give you what they call a 20-minute penalty. So now you're penalized where you got to miss a round or two
they
of playing
put you
hands.
On timeout. It's
you're
an
getting
actual
blinded
timeout.
Off, so it costs you money, so you have to behave.
Vince, I'm surprised you can get anybody to come to your house for a home game, by the way. I think you're too good. I think your friends probably know it by now.
Oh, man. It's not true anymore. I used to be very good. I used to win about 80% of the time in home games. And now it just doesn't happen that way.
Yeah.
Everybody's caught up. Everybody's very good. It's not a bargain anymore.
Technically, the home game is illegal. Technically.
Technically. Yeah.
Let's talk about online gambling just real quick. We're sort of out of time. But where are we in the state of online gambling, and is it going to be restored to what it was?
Well, it's legalized in a few states now, in Nevada, in New Jersey, Delaware. In a few states, it's legalized. And obviously, most of us are hoping that it's going to get legalized in many states across the country.
California, for example, needs money like crazy.
Yeah, it's insane.
Why wouldn't they okay that and just take their cut, take a tax?
Well, many have said this will be the next big state, and this will be the key state, honestly, because if California legalized online poker, it would be like the third largest country in the world for online gaming. So that would be huge, and there's so many players here that would like to play.
Come on, California.
And I'm like you, it just doesn't make sense to us as poker guys. Why, here's a business that the business wants to pay tax. The players wouldn't mind paying the tax.
Right.
The players want to have the right to play. It's a freedom of choice, honestly. And it just seems crazy to us. But the truth is, for those that still want to play online, you can do so on clubwpt.com, where it doesn't cost you any money. You can play as much poker as you want. You play a small monthly fee. You can win entries into WPT events. And it's a fantastic way to enjoy yourself playing poker from your home, and you can also possibly get in big tournaments and win big prize money. We give out $100,000 a month that you could win your share of in cash and prizes every month, and it really is a great deal. ClubWPT.com.
I watched the World Poker Tour, and I've seen you do that commercial 100 times, and I was wondering how you were going to get into it, and I salute you, sir. Very well done.
By the way, at the Legends, we have 3 starting days, so you can come out on the 23rd, that's Saturday, or the 24th or the 25th for your first opening day.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, and if your listeners, we certainly invite them to watch FSN every Sunday night, 8 and 11 p.m. The World Poker Tour is on with a new episode, and if your listeners want to be part of the WPT Final Table or watch great poker action and maybe see themselves on TV at a WPT episode, they should come out to the Legends of Poker Final Table at the Bicycle Casino on August 29th at 3 p.m. If you let them know that you heard Vince and I on the Kevin and Bean Show, we'll make sure you get VIP treatment.
Yes!
You'll get the red carpet treatment. Yeah. So come
join. He is good. He's a legend of poker and a legend of broadcasting. Vince, Mike, have a great time in Bell Gardens. Thanks so much for the time. We really enjoyed it on K-Rock today.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Oh.
That song ends before it says on the thing it's supposed to end. I swear
Come
to God.
Come on, Kevin.
That was a new song from Tove Lo called Habits on the world-famous K-Rock 106.7 KROQ.
She's a young Swedish woman, don't you know? Written a lot of songs for other people, now stepping out on her own, and I like her. I think that's a good song. I like her very much. I approve.
All right, good. Bean approves, everyone.
Excellent.
Mark it down.
The director of the only movie that matters, Sharknado 2, airing tonight on the Sci-Fi Channel, Anthony Ferrante, joins us in the 9 o'clock hour. First, though, how about our good friend Adam Carolla, the Ace Man? Hi, Adam. What's going on, buddy?
Yeah, man. Get it on.
Adam has a bunch of stuff coming up, including the Mangria bottle signing at Bridges Bar and Grill in San Diego. That's going to be on Wednesday, August the 6th. And don't forget, you're doing live podcast down in San Diego, also at the American Comedy Company. You can get the details at adamcarolla.com. I wanted to have you on. I know we normally do the Week in Rage, Adam, but you were in the news quite a bit yesterday, and it sounds like a little bit of a breakthrough of a story we've talked about from time to time about this patent trolls suit against you. You were being sued basically by some people who own a patent on what they claim is being able to put things up on the internet sequentially. And you went to a fundraising site, and we helped you spread the word that you were trying to raise some money to fight these patent trolls. And there's been a little bit of a development in the case, even ahead of it getting to trial. Can you tell us what's going on?
Well, I can tell you a few things, but not everything. Because, you know, in these matters, one of the first things you do is say you're not going to talk about the details
right.
of the case. But the stuff that's out there is out there. First off, I want to thank you, and I want to thank the listeners and everybody who supported us, because obviously it's been working. They released something yesterday that said they're trying to drop the case, but I won't agree to let them drop the case, which is a little absurd, because if you want to drop a case, you just drop a case.
They don't have to get your permission to drop a case against you.
Right. You can just go ahead and drop your case. So it's...
Why do you think they made that move?
They would like us to stop doing what we're doing, which is crowdfunding, which is helping us fight them. The bottom line is if they want to drop and walk away, they're free to drop and walk away anytime they want. If not, it's the game is still on. and the battle still wages, and we're still here to fight, and we're still here to have people join us and help us, and it's worked perfectly. It's just it's a great story. They came after us. We enlisted all the friends and all the people and all the fans of podcasting and the fans of just free speech, and we signed them up, and we fought them, and it's going great, but it's still going.
Is the reason, Ace, that there's still going to be a court date, though, is because you filed a countersuit against them once they sued you, and that's what you're not willing to drop, correct?
No, that is not, here's the sad part. I basically talk and I basically go out and beat the bushes and try to raise the money.
Right.
I don't know all the ins and outs. I know that if they want to drop it, they can drop it. And so far, to the best of my knowledge, they have not dropped it. So the battle wages on.
Now, part of the reason you're not satisfied with them, quote unquote, dropping it is because they're not doing it, what's the expression, with prejudice or without prejudice, or in some way that would prohibit them from filing it again at a later date, right?
Yeah, what we're not looking for is dropping it with terms. We want it dropped, plain and simple. I mean, we're not looking to compromise. We were never looking to compromise. If we were looking to compromise, we would have settled up a long time ago and probably saved a bunch of money. We're looking to win this case and get on with our lives, and then have everyone else in podcasting get on with their lives as well. That was always the plan. That was always the promise. The promise was, you help us and we're going to win this case and then sort of make the water safe for everybody. So even during the times when it seemed like, look, all you got to do is give them a little scratch and get out of here, we were never willing to do it. We never could do it because we made a promise to all the people that backed us that wasn't the direction we were going.
That's the business that they are in, though. They're in the business of suing people, and then the people go, it costs too much to defend this, so we'll pay you X amount of dollars for it to go away, and then they just make money and make money and make money and never take it to trial.
Sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. I mean, sometimes they go to trial and sometimes they don't. And in our case, I don't know because we haven't gotten there yet. But I do know one thing they sure as hell don't like is us going the direction we're going,
right,
which is essentially circling the wagons and rallying the troops, which is what we've done, which is what's been successful. And again, it's probably a little too early to pop the corks, but you may want to start chilling the champagne.
Or mangria, as the case may be, by the way.
That's what I said. Start chilling the mangria.
The one thing that I saw yesterday, Adam, that surprised me the most, and tell me if I got this right or if this was just somebody's interpretation of their remarks, was that we decided to drop the case against Carolla because we found out there wasn't as much money in podcasting as we thought. Now, have they not been to your garage and seen your collection of Lamborghinis?
Well, I bought the Lamborghinis after a slip and fall lawsuit.
Oh, good.
And that's where I got the money to buy those cars.
I like it. You know
that well. From the time I went over to Kimmel's house and threw myself down the stairs. and that's all I can say because we did settle up.
Sure.
So I can't,
yeah.
I can't, all right.
Do you expect to still be in court in September in beautiful Marshall, Texas?
Nobody wants to be in Marshall, Texas, and nobody wants to be in court, and especially a court in Marshall, Texas.
Right.
So I will hope that we're not, but the case is still ongoing, and we're still raising money. And if you want to go to AdamCarolla.com and hit the Amazon banner, we're doing this thing now where if you just sign up on Amazon, then whatever you purchase on Amazon, we'll get a little taste of that, and it'll go toward this, and it doesn't cost you any money, in other words.
That's awesome.
Yeah, you click through to Amazon.com, through AdamCarolla.com, and just buy whatever you are ordinarily going to buy, and that helps out Adam Carolla. Go to AdamCarolla.com for more. Don't forget, San Diego is where it's all happening, the Mangria bottle signing, and then the live podcast. You can get the details there. And we will look forward to talking to you again soon. Good luck with this, Adam. Fingers crossed. It's going well so far.
Without you.
That's true.
Thanks, man.
That's very true. Thank you, Adam.
Yay!
That's how we do.
Remix.
It's the Kevin and Bean Show. It's the world famous K-Rock at 8:57.
Ralph is here. Time for another look at the Showbiz Beat. And then Mr. Ferrante himself, the director of Sharknado 2, the second one, joins us in studio. Can't wait.
Not just showbiz news, but free stuff!
Yeah! I'm
Don't pot down my hot fudge holy moly.
Confused for a second. I was potting down your music, this music, so that you could play your music.
Uh-huh.
Then when you started it, the wrong one. Yeah, it was the wrong one. My heart's in the right place, Ralph.
I know it is. I know you mean well. I know you got a heart as big as all outdoors.
Shut up, Bean. I don't know how this game is played, but how many strikes till you're out?
Well, Kevin's like a T-ball player. We just keep putting it back on the top of the tee.
How dare you?
And we just say, yes, you did. You make contact. You actually hit the ball. You're a good boy.
And the ball just falls off the tee and rolls.
Day. Run! Good. You're learning.
I'm not wrong. Today has been exceptional, right?
It's been magical.
Okay.
It's been a rough day.
By rough, you mean awesome. Then I agree.
Yeah.
All right, let me give you some stuff. That stuff being passes to the K-Rock screening of Teenage Mutant.
Can you wait
Could you wait for the title to be completed?
What's wrong with you? I have the music ready to go. I was waiting.
Try it again.
Passes for the K-Rock.
What?
Too soon? Passes the K-Rock for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles coming to theaters everywhere August the 8th. However, you lucky, lucky people will get to go see it on August 6th at the Arclight Hollywood. Thanks to those of us here at K-Rock and our special K-Rock advanced screening. Call me now, 1-800-520-1067. We're going to give you those passes if you're one of the first five callers to get through on that line.
Call right now and we'll get right back to you.
No, we will not. We will talk to you right there on the spot when you've called.
Not sure why. What is kale? Is that fish?
No, it's not a fish. It is a vegetable. It's a super green food. And that's how we roll. I was thinking about the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles driving in.
Mm-hmm.
And they are identical. They all look exactly like mutant turtles.
Right.
So, to the best of my knowledge, they have no other jobs, no other lives, no secret identities. They don't work at a newspaper. They're not millionaire philanthropists. They don't have any loved ones.
And then they just jump in and change into that costume. They're always that.
So why do they wear masks? Why do they need to wear the masks? What identity are they protecting with their masks when they go out to fight crime?
I don't know.
Exactly.
I can't answer that.
Exactly.
I can answer that.
Oh, wait a minute. Oh, our resident Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle expert, Turtle Power Beer Mug, has an answer. Yes.
So you can tell them apart, Ralph. Because if they didn't wear masks, you wouldn't be able to tell Leonardo, Raphael, Michelangelo, and Donatello apart.
Because of the different colors they wear?
Yes.
So it's purely a device. It has no actual practical use whatsoever.
Yes.
Only time he comes alive.
I find that a cheat, and I do not like it.
Well, I know nothing about the world of the turtles. Are there other, in whatever, are they on Earth? Are the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles on Earth, first of all?
Yes, they are on Earth.
They're on Earth.
Are there other turtles their size that look like them that live in their world, or are they the only turtles?
Well, here's the thing. Michael Bay apparently is revamping their storyline. Apparently, so they may be aliens or something. I'm not sure what this reboot is, but the original four were the only four of their kind. There were four turtles who were doused with chemicals that mutated them and made them grow large size and get very intelligent and learn how to be ninjas by a sewer rat.
Well, then I'm with you that the masks make no sense, because I was thinking maybe they wanted to be anonymous among other turtles. People wouldn't know that they were the crime fighters.
Just the four of them. And they were able to recognize themselves in a crowd. So I guess they're...
Well, then it's stupid, dumb, and absurd.
They're doing it for our benefit, which obviously. I think is nice of them. Orlando Bloom almost fulfilled all of our wishes last night in Ibiza. Threw a punch at Justin Bieber. Tragically, sadly, according to onlookers, that punch missed.
Yeah, that's too bad.
But like Kevin, his heart was in the right place. They were partying, and apparently they were sitting close to each other. There's bad blood there because each of them at one time or another had been rumored to have been involved with the other one's woman. Orlando Bloom's ex-wife, Miranda Kerr, reportedly spent some time with Bieber
in 2012, and Orlando Bloom was seen with Selena Gomez, Bieber's on-again-off-again girlfriend. So the two of them did not like each other. Bieber reportedly came up to his table, tried to shake his hand, which I'm sure was an ironic handshake. I don't believe it was a heartfelt handshake.
Yeah, because you sort of apologize for being a dick ahead of time and then shake hands.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
If you mean it.
You're like, yo, bro, what's up? And you're shaking. Like, yeah, we both nailed Miranda Kerr together.
Yeah.
So Bloom rejected his handshake, and that's when things went south, and Bieber said something rude to Orlando to the likes of, she was good, about his ex-wife. At that point, Orlando Bloom threw a punch, which... No, actually, the point of the story is that the punch did not connect.
What's that?
It did not connect, the punch.
Oh, he missed?
He missed.
Oh.
You have a sound effect sounds like this?
No, I don't.
Oh, we could
that's
use pretty that, good because that's what we should use there.
Yeah. Swing and a miss.
And then they got into it, and there was a lot of talk and a lot of chest puffery.
Bieber. Not a word?
Yes. Bieber said, what's up, bitch, to him at some point, showing off how badass he is. And then their large security teams both broke them up, and Bieber apparently fled the restaurant to the applause of everyone who was there. No, there was no fighting, no breaking of glass, no punching, no kicking. There was no actual physical contact of any kind. Then, to show what a classy act he is, though, Bieber did Instagram a photograph of Orlando Bloom's ex-wife, Miranda Kerr, in a bikini.
Oh, no, he didn't.
So he showed him what's for.
What a burn.
Huzzah!
A dick.
You got that right. Today's celebrity birthdays, Arnold Schwarzenegger, our former governor. That man from The Expendables used to be the power that be over the state of California. He was our governor.
Real. For real. That happened.
He ran our state government.
It's science.
That's still sometimes when I look back on it and say, that was like a fever dream. That was like a weird... I had this dream where Arnold Schwarzenegger was the governor.
That couldn't have happened, right?
It was weird. Carrot Top was the president. And it was a strange dream. 67 years old today. Jean Reno, very talented actor. One of my favorite actors. 66 years old. Lawrence Fishburne, another great actor, is 53. Lisa Kudrow is 51. Vivica A. Fox turns 50. Terry Crews is 46. Simon Baker, the mentalist, is 45. He's still dreamy. Christopher Nolan, the man who gave us all the Dark Knight films, is still overlooking the DC comic universe when it comes to movies, is 44 years old. Tom Green is 43. Christine Taylor, also 43. Hilary Swank is 40 years old. Jamie Presley turns 37. Yvonne Strahovski is 32. And actress Joey King, who was so good on Fargo in the first season, she is 15 years old today. I'm Ralph Garman. I walk the showbiz beat.
Hard to believe it's been a year already since Sharknado came into our life. I don't really want to imagine and remember living in a world before there was a Sharknado. Do you guys?
No.
It changed everything. And it was only a matter of time. And the night is finally here. Tonight at 9 o'clock on Sci-Fi Channel, it's Sharknado 2, the second one. Please join me.
You really think there's going to be one of those shark storms here?
Yes!
I'm not crazy. People have to know the truth before it happens again.
This is the Big Apple. Something bites us, we bite back.
Well, I'm going to tell you once, and I'm not going to do it again.
Holy shark.
They're sharks. They're scary. No one wants to get eaten. But I've been eaten. And I'm here to tell you, it takes a lot more than that to bring a good man down.
Yeah.
A lot more than that to bring a New Yorker down.
Yeah.
You know what you just did, don't you? Jump the shark.
The man responsible for Sharknado 2, the second one, is on our phone right now. Anthony Ferrante joins us. Hey, Anthony, welcome back, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me back. You guys were one of the first people to embrace us last year. I talked to you the night the first one aired.
That's right. We talked to you about Sharknado, and we were excited about it, but we put that into the category of things we're excited about that no one else cares about.
Exactly.
And we were wrong. We were wrong for once. Everybody cared about it.
I think we were all wrong. I mean, I thought it was the weirdest movie ever in the history of sci-fi and that maybe stoners would really like it. I guess the rest of the world did.
We were at Comic-Con. We had Iron Zierling. Am I saying that right? Sorry.
Zierling.
With us. And I asked him before the movie came out, is it something that he thought he would proudly put on his resume? And he said, nope, it was not. And now that it became what it is, of course it is.
Well, you know, I mean, we all thought, okay, if we're going to destroy our careers, let's just go down with Flaming Sharks. And you know, it worked out. We didn't go, you know, we didn't go down with the ship. It kind of rose to the top and became this bizarre pop culture phenomena, which has just been fantastic ride.
Well, Ian and Tara Reid, his co-star, both were telling us of what their night was like last year of not watching the show. Tara was in Mexico. Ian was working in Las Vegas. And both of them had their phones just blowing up from people who were not just, hey, I see you on TV, people who were loving it. Tell me about where you were when Sharknado aired on Sci-Fi last year and what that night was like for you.
My wife and daughter, we went over to friends. We were going to do I was going to do live tweeting. We were going to watch the movie, and we were sitting there doing all this stuff. This was the first movie my daughter, who at the time was 10, had seen of any of my other movies because they were, most of them were horror films.
Right.
Really dark. And so I was a little hesitant to have her see it, but she just totally got into it. And then we started seeing all these tweets come in, like Mia Farrow saying, oh my God, and Rick Frost is doing Sharknado preparedness. And it just kept going. And I thought when I was going to live tweet, it was going to be like, there'll be five people, and they're all going to tell me I suck.
Right.
And then I'll just comment on making the movie. And then I couldn't keep up with the tweet. And after it was over, I sat there and kind of numb going, something happened, and I don't know what it was, but it was not normal for one of these movies.
And then it showed a second and third time and got bigger ratings each time, right?
Yeah, it did that. And then on top of that, it went theatrical 3 weeks later, and we sold out New York and Washington and Los Angeles for a one-night midnight showing. So, you know, there's definitely a lot of fans for this movie.
Well, there's no question it was a sensation, and I'm sure the phone was ringing on Monday talking to you about a sequel. So what were your thoughts as they started to put the story together for number two? Because you got to be thinking, wow, we really pretty much covered the ground of sharks coming out of the sky in a tornado. What do we have left?
Well, I never directed or written a sequel before, so I never thought this would have a sequel. And then they say, oh, we're gonna do a sequel, it's gonna be New York, and it's like, oh, there's nothing. Oh, wait a minute, what if we decapitate the Statue of Liberty and it rolls down the street and they play, you know, and
boom.
They go, oh, would it be cool if this happened? And it just, I literally all these and then I would do these radio interviews, and I think we were talking, I'm pretty sure we talked about a towering Sharkferno last year,
right? I think so, yes.
We put that here, and we put that in part two. So we would be joking about stuff, and it's suddenly like, hey, not a bad idea.
Let me ask you a question about making a movie like this, because you made the first one. There was no pressure because there was really no expectations. Then it became a huge phenomenon. Now you're writing a sequel and directing a sequel that is going to be watched. Is there a lot more pressure on that?
No, because I go into every movie trying to make the best film or the most ambitious film. So, I mean, the first movie, this was like my first chance to do action and comedy, and I was going to try to do everything I could with the resources. We had 18 days to do that movie. And so on this one, we had 18 days again, a little bit more money to shoot in New York, but I just wanted to push the envelope as much as possible. Most studio movies, you know, there's 2 or 3 years in between the sequel.
Right.
Sometimes the same filmmakers don't come back. So there's more pressure here. We've done 2 Sharknado movies in a year and a half, so it never felt like I stopped making the first movie. But tonally and all that stuff, I just wanted to make sure that we had the spirit of the first movie, and I wanted to do more stuff. We earned the right to be crazy after the end of the last movie when Ian got swallowed by a shark and changed by his way out.
Yeah, that was pretty strong.
Oh, that's one of the greatest moments in the history of cinema. Now, I know that there are a lot of celebrity cameos in the movie. Were people reaching out to you dying to be in the film, or did you just have a wish list of folks that you went after?
Well, that's what we went after, but then, you know, every day we would get a call. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, we had an 18-day shoot. We didn't have 100 days to schedule people, so a lot of people's availabilities, you know, it was literally, hey, this person wants to be in the movie. Write something now. It's like, oh, okay. And suddenly you're coming up with stuff the night before for an actor that you want in the movie. And, you know, then you get people showing up the day of. Like, we had Robert Klein show up as the mayor of New York. And, like, there was one line for him. It's like, I'm not just giving Robert Klein one line. And say, I tell Robert, I'm going to throw you a bunch of lines on set. Can you do extra stuff? He's like, yeah, sure, whatever you want. So we gave Robert that whole bite back line that's in the trailer. I think was either written the night before or that morning because I wanted him to say more stuff.
I feel like that's, this is how all movies should be made.
Sure. Well, why not if they come energy out this good?
No, there's an energy to it.
I believe you.
It's actually an energy of desperation because you don't have that 100-day cushion, so nothing, everything is not planned. And I think the creativity that comes out of it is like, you don't have 2 trucks, you have 1. Make something happen. I think that's the magic. And I think, you know, a lot of studio movies are very, very pre-programmed and planned, and some of them are great.
Yeah.
But the rough edges, I helped it.
Are you going to be live tweeting again tonight, Anthony?
Oh, yes. I'll be live tweeting with a lot of our Asylum crew in Burbank, and it's going to be fun. And my family's going to come out. We're going to have a blast.
Oh, it's going to be so much fun. Sharknado 2, the second one, airs tonight on the Sci-Fi Channel at 9 or 6, depending on what cable or satellite provider you have. You can follow Anthony on Twitter at AC Ferrante, AC Ferrante, and at scifimovies.com. Can't wait for it, and I guess we'll know, tomorrow or Friday, whether you've got plans for Sharknado 3, right?
Well, they've already announced the 3, and I think, you know, we'll see what happens. I mean, I think everything comes down to what can we do. And after the second one was announced, we had a lot of ideas, and so I'm sure there's a lot more stuff that you can milk out of the Sharknado franchise.
Sure,
certainly prolonged it with this one, and you know, look, we all got the bug.
Well, I know, but after having you in last year on the day that came out, and talking to you today, I believe that it's going to be endless. I believe that this should go on once a year for life.
You know, if sci-fi has it their way, I'm sure it will.
Fantastic.
And I'm sure we'll be in space at some point.
Oh, yep, awesome. Exactly. Well, listen, thanks so much for squeezing us in today. I know how busy you are. Good luck with the movie tonight. We'll talk again soon. All right, Anthony?
Thank you guys so much. I appreciate all the support.
You bet.
Bye-bye. Thank you.